This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, and welcome to a discussion on the hot topic of the liquids in DC and how the environmental, social and governance, or ESG, views of LGIM's workplace pension members are feeding into the discussions we're having on this topic. I'm Heather Force, and I'm joined today by John Rowe, LGIM's Head of Multi-Asset Funds, and Jessel Mistry, Head of DC Investment, to discuss the findings, or touch on them, of our fourth annual research into UK DC members' attitudes to ESG matters and their pensions. Back in July, nine leading UK pension providers, including Legal & General, signed up to the UK government's Mansion House Compact, committing themselves to allocating 5% of assets in their default pension funds to unlisted equities by 2030. I understand that the argument in favour of illiquids is that these types of investments could unlock more money for DC pension funds while investing in the country's overall economic growth. Jessel, if I could come to you first, could you tell us a little more about the main rationale for illiquids?
Yeah, absolutely, Heather. So I think it's really important that we start with why we're doing this, and that is about ensuring that we provide our members with the best possible outcomes at retirement. And so in this challenging time, it's really, really important that we work our investments as hard as possible to deliver those better outcomes. And this means that we should be accessing the full range of investment tools available. And whilst we've generally focused on the public markets, the listed investments that we have, we've seen more and more companies remaining private. And so we should be looking at this part of the market as well to access different investment opportunities. This can include investments which perform very differently to listed markets, providing that element of diversification and risk management. And because you're locking your money a little bit, you should be expected to be rewarded for that. And therefore, there is potential for a premium in terms of return that can be returned from that side of things. Illiquid investments can also have a wider positive impact, such as driving productivity in communities, as well as supporting environmental, social and governance issues within the assets or the companies that we invest in. And so there's some real positives to be taken from investing in illiquids.
Thank you, Jessel. The term illiquids captures a very broad universe of investment opportunities, each with very different features. So it's important to decide what you're looking for. And John, could I turn to you to expand on this for us, please?
Yeah, sure. So obviously my primary job is we manage money for end clients. And so we are very focused on the investment reasons. And I do think you need a very clear rationale for including illiquids. Illiquidity itself is a form of complexity, and it brings its own risk. So as an analogy, athletes accept the risk of training injuries because they see the benefits of training. And for me, I think it should more be that strategies accept illiquidity because they see the benefits of the illiquids that they're invested in. So it's sort of, why, what is that benefit? Well, I think generally it fits into three investment reasons. I think the first can be there might be an asset class that you can only access in illiquid form. So a good example of that would be early stage companies that are prior to being listed on stock exchanges. So these are startups or those sorts of things, or early growth stages. And then it could also be that you find an illiquid that's similar to an existing asset but offers a clear illiquidity premium. So a good example of that is a lot of portfolios have government bonds in them, but you can actually find bonds from development banks like the World Bank or the European Investment Bank. They're guaranteed by countries like the UK and Germany and the US, but they offer a higher return than government bonds, despite being similar quality, because of their lower liquidity. And then the third reason I would say is in certain asset classes, maybe like hedge funds, certain managers only offer investment in an illiquid form. And so that might be the third reason, is to access the managers you really want, you have to accept that degree of illiquidity.
So John, you've focused on investment reasons for illiquids there, but Jessel, you've already mentioned the benefits are wider. Could you elaborate on that for us a bit more, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned a little bit around the impact that illiquid assets could have, or investing in illiquid assets could have, on communities and society in general. And that can be a kind of a circular approach, in that by investing in communities and in societies, by providing regeneration within those areas, it actually generates more jobs for members themselves and actually more prosperity for them themselves. So actually, as part of their pension, they're giving back to their community and delivering for themselves and their wider kind of neighbours as well within that. So for example, it could be things like investing in turning a brownfield site into a social housing enterprise, for example. It could be about investing in companies that are looking at new technologies around carbon capture to support climate transition. It could be doing things like investing in companies that look at new technology around healthcare and new treatments around that sort of element. So there's some real positives to be gained, both from a kind of an economic standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint for members. And if we can then take that a step further and engage people with that, so actually explain to them that you're invested in that social housing project around the corner from where you live, or actually that company that's just created that new cancer treatment, your pension fund invests in that, that could drive a different level of engagement for members. And we see that that individuals, when they are engaged, they do tend to look at their pension a little bit more, and that could lead to wider benefits. So if you're engaged in your pension and you're looking at it more regularly, you might think about putting more money into it, especially if it is having that kind of wider good element to it as well. And ultimately, the more money you put into a pension plan, the more you save, the more you get out at the end. And that's a benefit for members as well, which is kind of a positive unintended consequence of doing this type of investment as well.
So when going about considering a diversified investment portfolio or strategy, what are the main things that you'd consider?
Yeah, so this is where a lot of our time goes when we're thinking about illiquids. And the first thing is to be really careful how we assess risk on them. The reason for that being that when they can apparently offer very, very attractive risk-adjusted returns. And that's often a big part of the sales pitch when people highlight the benefits of illiquids. But that's really because of how illiquids are valued. So the way they're valued is on a best efforts basis, with an agent paid to approximate what they think the value is. And that's very, very different from how, say, a listed equity trades. A listed equity goes up and down with markets and can be very volatile, because it's the price between a willing buyer and seller at any specific moment in time. So let's take an example. You could own a property fund, and if you owned a property fund, that property fund would be valued by a valuer, and that would tend to lead generally to quite a smooth pricing. Or exactly the same company, buildings could be put inside a company, and you could own the shares in that company. So you've got the same economic exposure either way. But in the second case, you own a listed equity. So it's bouncing around every single day with markets, despite the underlying economics in the long term being the same. So why does that matter? Because when you're thinking about a liquid and how you quantify risk, it's very important to convert them into a proxy asset that's actually listed, so that you're comparing them in a fair way with other investments. And then the second thing that we focus on a lot is the mix of those illiquids and the regional exposures. So we really think diversification is at the core of how DC strategies should be run. And that's so that we're not too exposed to any single asset class or region. So we've already heard from Jez lots of reasons to favour the UK. But we actually think when it comes to illiquids in aggregate, while there might be some UK bias, you do need a global approach. So, for example, over 5 years, regional equity performance can vary by a whopping 50%. And the same could be true for illiquids. So if all of your illiquids were in one region, it might turn out that that's just the wrong region, and actually other regions' illiquids do much better. So by diversifying, you reduce the variability of potential outcome that you might get.
So you say that, but US equities have been the strongest performer, and diversification hasn't worked. So why don't we think the same way about illiquids?
So I think that's very fair, and that's a challenge we're seeing a lot. So US equities are about 65% of global listed equities, and they've been by far the best performing region over the last 5 to 10 years. But the point is, in advance, you don't know which one is going to do best. whatever information the market knew 5 or 10 years ago was already in the price. You've already got like a relatively efficient market where everybody, you've got buyers and sellers, and everybody's looking at the information and trying to judge what is the fair current value. So the fact that the US has dramatically outperformed over the last decade is something that we feel you have to be very humble about. It's, in hindsight, it feels very obvious. But actually, when you think back, the pricing was there for a reason. It was the market's aggregate view of the opportunities and threats for each asset class. And the same could be true in illiquids. Yes, it might well be that a particular illiquid asset class or a particular region is by far the best performer. The problem is, it's all, in our view, it's almost impossible to have high conviction over which one that will be in advance, which unfortunately is the key in investments. You don't get anything for the benefit of hindsight.
Thanks, John. And we hear lots about the advantages of illiquids, such as illiquidity premium, low correlation to listed assets and inflation linkage. But what could the flip side be?
So the biggest single structural risk for illiquids is in their name. So at least it's nice and obvious. It's that illiquidity, and it's the risk that too many investors run for the door at the same time, and the door's not big enough, and you have a problem because you've got illiquid assets and lots of people trying to sell. Now, why does that happen? Well, it predominantly happens for two reasons which are linked. The first is that if the price of listed assets like equities have already fallen loads, people might be concerned that illiquid assets will eventually follow suit. Or to put it another way, the equities are now much better value than they were before the fall, but the illiquids are similarly valued because they haven't changed in price. Now, not only are you worried potentially about that divergence in pricing, but you might be worried other investors are worried. And if you worry other investors are worried and are going to run for the fire exit, you kind of want to get there first. And as a result, you've got this thing called game theory, where you start to think how other people might behave, and that impacts your best behavior. So this was made very famous by John Nash a long time ago, and he won a Nobel Prize for it. So what can you actually do to mitigate this illiquidity risk? Well, it's all about reducing the incentives to run for the door. So the first thing you can do is you can actually make the illiquids only buyable or sellable alongside some liquid assets. Those liquid assets will move up and down like normal equities. And in doing so, the fund's price will be moving up and down and will feel less extreme in comparison. The second thing you could do is, in extreme conditions, you could actually adjust the price of the illiquids to reflect massive moves in listed markets. You could say, wow, there's been such a big move, I'm going to make an adjustment to the price people can exit from to better reflect the likelihood that that smoothed price might fall in the future. And the third thing you can do is, you can, for large divestments, you can set a notice period. So if I ask to divest today, you only give me my money in 6 months. And that combination helps reduce the incentive for investors to rush for the door, because it's less appealing, and they know it's less appealing for other investors, and you're less likely to get that issue.
Oh, that's great, John. Thanks. I think I understand that now. Now, illiquids require a different level of governance. So, Jessel, if I could turn to you, what would trustees and managers need to look out for?
So I think it's really, really important that trustees understand all of those challenges that John's just taken us through, and understand how they might deal with those or mitigate those. So, for example, that John mentioned earlier, the valuation point, you know, the value of some of these assets are done on a best endeavors basis by someone who's maybe an expert in that field. But it only really reflects it, the real price of that is reflected in what someone is willing to pay for that. So really, it's about trying to understand that dynamic. And if the markets change, or if the markets move, then actually, what does that mean for the pricing element of that? So trustees and others who are looking to allocate to illiquids really need to understand that and get themselves comfortable then what that might mean for themselves, for their members and their portfolios. Illiquids, as the name suggests, means that you could be locked away. Your money could be locked away for some time. So trustees need to understand that if they're going to do that, what happens to their money in between that? Where do they allocate other contribution flow, particularly in DC pensions? Where do the contributions go, and how can they ensure that they're maintaining that diversification and risk management across the board? And if people want to retire, if the scheme decides to move in a different way, then what happens at that point and how do they work that? And they'll need to ensure that they have the rules and they have the kind of the governance and the due diligence that sits around that to support that moving forward. Each different type of illiquid is very different in the nature of how it operates. So you have everything from property and real estate through to infrastructure projects through to private equity, which are all sitting on different spectrums of risk and return. And so by being able to understand that in a bit more detail, you understand those levels of risk and return, gives you an understanding of how you might want to allocate to that. For many of our clients, the feedback we've had so far is that that actually is taking it a step further. In DC, we haven't had to deal with that so far. So their understanding in this space works is a little bit difficult. And so trying to ensure that they have access to a diversified portfolio, something that is managed to them on a multi-asset perspective, is really important to them. The other side to this, obviously, is from an ESG perspective, ensuring that clients understand the ESG metrics or the kind of the profile of some of these investments. So it can be quite different. So we may have got ourselves into a position where portfolios are all designed to reduce carbon over time. It's all about greenhouse gas emissions and what your gas emissions are. And you need to ensure that you're showing that kind of constant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions over time. But with these types of investments, they can be quite different. They can be quite carbon intensive. So, for example, if you're building a property, in the initial stages, they can be very carbon intensive, the concrete that goes into it, the fuel that's used to actually build it, those sorts of elements. So it's understanding that dynamic and that in the shorter term, this might actually see some spikes in carbon emissions with a longer term good that actually you're building a property that is better for the environment overall over the longer term, or it might have some social good, which obviously isn't captured in things like carbon emissions or greenhouse gas emissions. So some real understanding of those dynamics that sit within your portfolio. So as you allocate to these, you're not surprised by any of this element, and you're doing so in a very informed manner so that you can mitigate the risks that sit around that. And you know, we're very much looking to kind of understand, when we speak to our clients, as I said, they're looking for a multi-asset portfolio, something that gives them access to different investment opportunities with different dynamics and therefore spreads the risk across that. And that's instead of investing in individual sleeves of illiquids that John kind of outlined earlier on as well.
Yeah, John, did you want to nip in here?
Yeah, I'll just cover off kind of as fund managers, how do we own those responsibilities that Jez has outlined? Because a lot of them we're seeing from clients, they're kind of outsourcing a lot of that due diligence and a lot of that governance to us by saying, you know, we don't want single sleeves, exactly as Jez said. We want a multi-asset illiquid proposition. So we've really listened to them about what in DC do people want from this type of investment. And for example, the feedback that's come back is that their target return for these types of investments is pretty high. So that implies a lot of focus in areas with higher return potential and higher associated risk. So those would be things like venture capital, early stage growth equities, and probably less focus from us in areas like debt, which tends to be somewhat safer, but with a somewhat lower return potential. We then spend a lot of time on the liquidity management in the ways that I've already outlined, and that's been a big part of the focus. And we also can centralize the research of the asset classes and the managers so that each of our clients doesn't have to do that research individually, which most of the feedback has been would be too much governance for them to get through.
But surely all of this must come at a cost. So how do you get comfortable on the value for money perspective, Jessel?
Yeah, absolutely. So the nature of these investments are more complex in the way that they operate. And therefore, there is a cost associated with having to access these investments. But the research that we've done shows us that by paying more and accessing these investments, even after paying more for them, we expect them to deliver better returns or better outcomes over the longer term for members, and therefore deliver those better returns. So how do you ensure that you gather that, you actually access that, is the important point around this, and making sure that you're comfortable with that. And that comes down to that point around management and governance of your portfolio as well. Ensuring you have the capability to oversee that on a regular basis, to make sure you're accessing a range of different investment opportunities to deliver those outcomes. And therefore then providing that return to members over that period of time as well. And that gives us that sense that clients will start to understand value for money. And the research that we've done shows that clients, advisors do accept that illiquids, whilst costing more, are expected to deliver better outcomes, and therefore then would be willing to pay for that as part of a strategy in a world where we need to deliver more for members with things like the cost of living crisis.
Thanks, Jess. Now I want to focus on the members' perspective. And I gather that the move towards illiquids could prove to be quite popular with them.
Yeah, I definitely think so. This year, we surveyed the largest number of DC pension savers we've ever interviewed for our annual research. We actually surveyed more than 3,600 members. And we found that almost three quarters of them, 72%, said that they pay higher pension fees to invest in infrastructure projects that supported renewable energy sources, such as things like solar parks and wind farms. Similar numbers said that they pay high fees for funds that invested in other assets, such as building affordable homes, better roads, and the creation of local jobs. And so we really do think that members are willing to invest in these sorts of investments, and especially if they have that element of positive impact on society overall. Members do kind of generally see this logic of incorporating ESG considerations into their long-term investment strategies. And that's really encouraging when we see that more than 8 out of 10 of them said that they'd have wanted to be more involved with their pensions and its investments. And if they'd known this, that it was actually being used to reward and encourage companies to make positive ESG impact, they'd definitely take more of an active interest in that. And as I said right at the beginning, I think that could have some really positive consequences in terms of people being more engaged with their pension, understanding how it operates much better, making better decisions, but also potentially putting more in and saving more for the future as well. So whilst there are challenges with incorporating illiquids within an investment portfolio, and John touched on a few of those earlier on, if we get it right, there can also be some really meaningful benefits for members.
Thanks, Jessel. That's brilliant. So, John, do you have any closing thoughts to add?
No, I think it's been really interesting talking about the benefits of illiquid, but also the complexity. I'm a worrier. I'm a risk manager. That's what I do all day. So trying to really work through how we deal with the illiquidity and we get the right level of diversification, the right managers, is the key for me. I can absolutely see the benefits to the UK economy and also more broadly to investors. But for me, it's really the devil is in the detail, and getting that right will be key to these delivering positive benefits.
Well, thank you both very much for that. And thank you out there for listening.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.